Welcome to this Monday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's show, Taylor Charleston will be in, and he's covering return on investment calculations for cover crops in almond orchards. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news headlines, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
California grape growers and shippers are waiting to find out how recent weather events will affect the current California grape crop. They had a few surprise rainstorms go through the valley, and they're facing a pretty massive heat wave right now. They've had occasional heat throughout the summer in spurts, but right now there are temperatures over 110 degrees, according to Mike Asdorian of DLJ Produce. He does note, though, that there is still plenty of fruit available and to promote. If anything, it's potentially shortened up the back end of the crop. As an industry, they have to assess where the total crop volume is going to finish out, and it may be more of a question of what's going to happen in November and December. Overall, the California grape volume is down this year. Approximately 95 million packages were anticipated this year, which is a slight decrease from last year, about a 10% drop-off. This is because of a freeze earlier in the season in the bloom stages of the vine, he says. Initially, that lower crop volume was around bloom set and the freeze, and now the current weather conditions are taking their toll on the total volume that is already out there. In varieties, Scarlet Royals are now coming on after a slower start because of the heat. There are a lot of Scarlet Royals, and that will be a majority of the volume in the red seedless grapes, according to Asdorian. In addition, there are propriety varieties such as IFG's Sweet Celebration and Jack Salutes. Chrissies have already finished. Green grapes are transitioning between varieties with Ivory, Valley Pearls, and Great Greens finishing, and most growers are going into the Sweet Globe and Autumn Kings that are already being picked. They're a little early this year. There's also Autumn Crisp, and that's a favorite for export demand. The late side of the deal will be mostly Autumn King and Autumn Crisp once they get through the current green mix of varieties, so starting in October through December. Following slower demand in the early part of August, demand has been more recently picking up. It was slow because some varieties, especially in the green seedless, were on top of each other and inventories got a little heavy, according to Asdorian. The challenge now is continually assessing this current crop, contending with the weather conditions. He says they're working really hard to be out in the field and watching what's going on. He thinks there's going to be some damage done, and the industry has to do a good job at packing good fruit so they don't see a two-tier market. Mission Produce Incorporated, a world leader in sourcing, producing, and distributing fresh Hass avocados with additional offerings in mangoes and nature sweet tomatoes, the producer of North America's best-selling snacking tomatoes, Cherubs, has announced a long-term third-party logistics partnership leveraging Mission's state-of-the-art Ford Distribution Center in Laredo, Texas. The move is anticipated to support the expansion of Nature Sweet's greenhouse portfolio, which includes the industry's leading snacking tomatoes, medium-large tomatoes, cucumbers, and peppers. In a mutually beneficial partnership, Mission will provide Nature Sweet with cold storage, cross-docking, repacking, inventory management, access to quality inspections, and other services. Nature Sweet plans to consolidate about 70% of its total product volume coming from Mexico in Mission's Laredo FDC and distribute to U.S. customers located throughout the Southwest, Midwest, and east of the Mississippi. Mission's 261,000 square foot Laredo Distribution Center opened in September 2021, with a goal to support the $4.2 billion of produce imported through the Laredo World Trade Port of Entry. The partnership is Mission's largest 3PL agreement to date and expands on the company's existing logistics partnerships across its other FDCs in New Jersey, California, and Calgary. Winery tasting room visitation hit a speed bump in May across 400 wineries on the West Coast, tracked by Community Benchmark. One reason recent numbers are looking low is last year's numbers were very high. There are a couple theories as to why growth has slowed. One driver could be the travel opening up, with increased competition for tourism giving people more options beyond driving to their nearest winery. Another factor could be the economic climate, including higher gas prices. The falloff includes Napa and Sonoma, but Napa-Sonoma is outpacing other regions in visitors and spending. Long-distance travelers may account for some of that difference. Regions outside of Napa and Sonoma are more dependent on drivable local traffic. Wineries are still 30% ahead of where they were in 2019 and 8% ahead of 2021 on revenue across all regions in the data set. Food and Drug Administration is committed to enhancing the safety of leafy greens through continued implementation of the Leafy Greens S-Tech Action Plan. As part of this effort, the FDA is announcing targeted sampling of leafy greens grown on farms and ranches during the fall of 2022 harvest season in the Salinas Valley region of California, releasing results from a 2021 sampling assignment and providing an update on other work under the action plan. One key aspect of the LGAP is sampling efforts that seek to detect and prevent contaminated product from reaching consumers and help leafy greens growers and processors identify practices or conditions that might present microbial issues so they can strengthen the microbiological safety of their operations. During the fall of 2022 harvest season, the FDA plans to collect about 240 lettuce samples at farms and ranches in the Salinas Valley. These farms and ranches were identified by traceback investigations in recent years as being potentially associated with a foodborne illness outbreak in which lettuce or leafy greens were the likely or suspect food vehicle. The FDA may also collect environmental samples such as water, soil, and scat as appropriate based on observations made at the time of sampling and a farm or ranch's past inspection history. All samples will be tested for Salmonella and E. coli, and sampling will begin in mid-September and run through next month.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Many almond growers have heard their peers, as well as others with interest in improving pollinator habitat and soil health, endorse the planting of cover crops to accomplish those goals. Those same growers may have wondered if money spent on seeds and labor, as well as the cost of time to manage cover crops, truly pay off. Can the economic benefit of cover crops accurately be measured, and if so, what is the return on that investment, the ROI? The Almond Board of California, in an effort to directly address questions about the ROI of cover crops, recently completed a case study in one orchard in Stanislaus County, where cover crops had been planted for a decade. The case study relied on a calculator system developed by the American Farmland Trust. Michael Roots, ABC's specialist for field outreach and education, worked with grower Christine Gemperle to evaluate the ROI of cover crops on 20 acres of her 40-acre orchard near Ceres.
What this case study accomplishes is to showcase to growers in an easy-to-read format what challenges this grower, in this case Christine Gemperle, was able to overcome with implementing cover crops in her orchard. It also was a good way to showcase that in the time that she has been doing it, she has seen a positive ROI benefit in her orchard.
The ROI calculation starts by interviewing the grower and getting an idea about their operation, in this case Gemperle. A combination of published machinery and material cost estimates and data supplied by Gemperle was used to estimate the cost of operations on average before and after cover crops were planted. The analysis was limited to only those incoming cost variables affected by cover crop adoption.
You pick the grower that you're going to use that has a positive soil health story to tell. You start with an interview process. You go through when they started implementing cover crops, how they started doing it, and what has changed before and after. So through this long interview process, what you get is you get the costs that they spent operationally before implementing soil health, their costs after, which includes new costs like cover crop seed and more labor to manage the cover crop that they have. And then you take in increases and decreases in net income, which in this case study was an increase in yield.
Roots said this type of ROI calculation is also feasible with other crops.
American Farmland Trust has done multiple case studies across the country in the United States, and they've done it in multiple different crops. So this calculator will analyze anything where you have before costs, after costs of implementing soil health practices, and then just analyzing what those differences are to show that return on investment of what the growers have spent.
Gemperly's story for implementing cover crops into her almond orchards is an interesting one.
She was very motivated to provide habitat for the bee pollinators that she uses in her almonds, as well as other natural pollinators. Once she gave it a try, she really enjoyed it, and she has continued to do it for over 10 years now that she's implemented it into her orchard. She's seen a multitude of benefits, most specifically in her reduction in pesticide use. Since she switched from natural vegetation in the middle of her rows, and she's made that a wider strip down the middle of planted cover crop, she's reduced her inputs in herbicide control. She's had to spray less. She's seen a change in the weed species that grows in her field. She has also seen a increase in beneficial insects, which has helped her to reduce her treatment for mites in May in her orchard. And what this has come out to with the increase in cost in her cover crops, her decrease in costs in pesticides, and her increase in yield improvement, she has seen a 459% return on investment for what she spent in cover crops.
The bottom line is that Gemperly's net income per acre grew by $499 annually for a total of $9,976 for the 20 acres. That works out to an ROI of 459% based on the $1,516 average cost of seeds, plus the value of her time at $655 each year to fine-tune the process. Overall, Gemperly has found multiple ways to make the process economically feasible and efficient.
She uses a $20 Scott seeder on the front of her mule that she already has to broadcast the seed. I think that's a big challenge a lot of growers feel is the planting costs. She's found a way to do that very economically. She's also found a way in post-harvest. There's a lot of operations that still need to go on. Mummy shaking, pruning, shredding of prunings. What Christine does is she goes through and plants one every other row of cover crop right after harvest. She does her final irrigation for the season to set that every other row of cover crop seeds. This gives her time in the, what I call the open row, to do the work that needs to be done in the winter. So she's able to do her mummy sanitation. She's able to prune, shred. And then after all of that's done in middle of December, she goes through and plants that open row of cover crop seeds and then lets the winter rain irrigate that in. So she's found a way to combine operational practices with implementing cover crop.
For growers interested in participating in a case study for calculating ROI of cover crops in their orchards, Almond Board of California and American Farmland Trust encourages reaching out.
We're always looking for growers that would be interested in doing a case study with them. I think it would be best for them to work with possibly American Farmland Trust to do a case study on their operation using the calculator.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
The Senate Finance Committee unanimously voted to move Doug McKellip's nomination to be the USTR's chief agricultural negotiator to the full Senate for a final vote. U.S. agriculture groups reacted positively to the news. It's clear there is bipartisan momentum behind both his nomination and the need to open markets for America's farmers who rely on trade, according to Brian Keel, Farmers for Free Trade Executive Director. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall says the vote comes at an important time as current and future trading partners look to the U.S. to help meet the growing demand for food, fuel, and fiber. The USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service has reviewed a new tomato variety from Norfolk Plant Sciences. The tomato was modified to alter its color to purple and enhance the nutritional quality. The agency says it found the plant is unlikely to pose an increased plant pest risk compared to other cultivated tomatoes and is not subject to regulation. That means from a plant pest risk perspective, this plant may be safely grown and bred in the U.S. The gene-edited tomato is high in antioxidants believed to fight cancer and heart disease. A Rabobank report says interest in specialty crops should continue growing worldwide. Gene editing technology like CRISPR lets scientists design a plant without introducing foreign genes and should help reduce the recent controversy over GMOs. They expect that specialty crops like fruits and vegetables with output traits to be among the first new GMOs to hit the market, according to the report. The U.S. says Russia has no grounds to scuttle the Black Sea grain deal that has now freed up shipments of more than 1 million tons of Ukrainian grain and food items and helped ease war-fueled inflation. Is Russia again trying to blackmail the West over sanctions, this time threatening the Black Sea grain deal? State Department Principal Deputy Spokesman Vedant Patel won't say, but dismisses Moscow's complaints to U.N. officials.
U.S. sanctions have always had clear exemptions for food and fertilizer, and our sanctions have never targeted humanitarian assistance. We want to see food and fertilizer reach global markets, and Russia must continue to live up to its commitments.
Russia has already cut off gas supplies to much Europe and in recent days has stepped up its threats against the grain initiative brokered by Turkey and the UN.
I believe there were allegations that grain was not going to countries that needed it. That simply is not the case either. Because of this arrangement, grain has been able to reach global markets and gone to countries that need it desperately.
And that's not all.
And some of these other allegations that we've seen that, one, global food prices are rising just aren't the case. In fact, global food prices have fallen as a result of the Black Sea port arrangement.
But the joint monitor for the shipment says still high fuel and fertilizer prices are placing immense pressure on farmers, consumers, and millions who face poverty and hunger. Every shipment cleared helps to calm markets and boost supplies, as well as keeping farmers producing. The Dairy Management Incorporated's new product competition is accepting applications for innovative products that focus on dairy's qualities related to calming. The program used to be known as the National Dairy Council New Product Competition. It is open to U.S. undergraduate and graduate students to develop products in line with industry and consumer insights to uncover innovative dairy-based products that offer calming benefits. Research shows that with a heightened emphasis on mental and emotional well-being, consumers are looking for products that calm. There is projected growth associated with products that calm, and these are of particular interest to Generation Z consumers. Successful entries will demonstrate innovation and provide value to consumers. The judging panel includes experts from across the dairy industry. The winning team will earn $8,000, with second place receiving $5,000 and $3,000 going to third place. The application deadline is January 16th of 2023. For more information, log on to usdairy.com. Another huge month for U.S. agriculture exports is hoping take those sales to a record high level for the year. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
The latest month for which we have complete ag export numbers is July, those just released this week. And as far as U.S. agricultural export sales?
The best July on record.
With sales of $14.9 billion, USDA economist Bart Kenner says during the first 10 months of this fiscal year, most months have been setting export sales records. Of course,
the increase in prices across the board, of course, contributes to this.
But Bart says another contributor,
consistent supply from U.S. producers.
While at the same time,
we've seen shortcomings from various competitors,
such as Brazil and Argentina. So as far as export sales for the first 10 months of this fiscal year, we're at $167 billion, up 14% from the same time frame a year ago, and on the way to an expected record, $196 billion for all of fiscal 22. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
A group of researchers at the University of California recently produced a study that provides insight on the financial feasibility of commercially growing organic strawberries in California. The study takes into consideration several different aspects of organic strawberry production. Jeremy Murdoch, Staff Research Associate at UC Davis in the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics, tells us more about the study.
It takes into consideration all the cultural practices that are necessary to produce high-quality organic strawberries in the region described, which is Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Benito counties, which is within the Central Coast region of California. Also, it includes the non-cash overhead costs and the cash overhead costs, otherwise known as investments. Within the cultural practices, as described in the narrative part of the report, you know, you've got land preparation, pre-fertilization, and irrigation components. You've got the plant establishment and post-plant fertilization and irrigation components. You got pest management, which includes vertebrate control, insects, weed control, as well as insect control and disease control, and you know, the harvest component, which includes, you know, the actual harvesting and the returns, the assessments, the sales and marketing costs, the cooling costs, and the post-harvest cleanup costs.
Both prospective and current growers can use this study as a baseline for their own operations to help ensure that they have the full picture of potential profitability of organic strawberry production. The study, named Sample Costs to Produce and Harvest Organic Strawberries in the Central Coast Region 2022, can be found at coststudies.ucdavis.edu. Murdoch tells us how growers can use the study as a tool for lending and other financial components.
You can look at tables 1 and 2 of the cost studies of this cost study, and there is a your cost column. So you've got a hypothetical well-managed farm operation cost outlined in those tables. And then if any of your costs deviate from those costs, you can, like, for example, your water cost or your, you know, labor costs or your, you know, your some of your machine operations, you can put in your own costs in that column. And you can use that as a guideline to determine your own costs. But you can use this as a tool, you know, for procuring bank loans and other financing as well.
Representative of California's new minimum wage and overtime laws, the study also includes a newly expanded section for labor costs.
Well, labor has become a big issue that we're trying to depict as well as we can, because it's becoming a larger percentage of the overall cost, the actual hired labor component. So what we're doing is we're trying to divide the labor costs up as well as we can, meaning in table 2 of the study, we have equipment operator labor, we've got non-machine labor, we've got irrigation labor, and we've got harvest labor. So we don't just give you the total labor, but we like to give you as much information as possible, or labor information as possible. And we do that, as I just mentioned, by breaking down the labor costs into types of labor. You know, as we all know, there was a minimum wage law that was enacted a handful of years ago, and we're getting to the end of that as far as $1 an hour minimum wage increase in California. And, you know, agriculture has been affected by that, as well as, you know, all the other labor rates. So, you know, we just include the new policy in the study. There also is a overtime labor regulation beginning, I believe it's this year. It might be 23, actually, when anything above 40 hours a week will be 1.5 times your labor rate. You'll be paid an extra overtime wage. So we just want to describe these labor issues and labor costs in detail.
If you are currently commercially producing strawberries or are considering it, take a look at this study. Murdoch leaves us with some information about the demand for organic strawberries in the industry as a whole.
The demand for organic strawberries seems to be relatively strong. This 2022 study, the yields were much higher, were increased significantly compared to the previous organic strawberry studies. So I think the cultural practices have been, you could say, more dialed in to produce, you know, more and higher and high quality fruit. So we just wanted to depict that in the study as well. I believe the yield for this study is 7,000 trays per acre. So it's a more productive industry in 2022.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.